Joe Courtney is one of the most interesting guys in the House of Representatives, and he's in the beautiful 2nd District in Connecticut. Has a lot of water there, doesn't it?
It does. We got the largest section of Long Island Sound coastline of any of the other districts in Connecticut, and beautiful coastline, you know, Mystic, Groton, Old Saybrook, Old Lyme. I mean, really, you know, wonderful quality of life in that part of it. And then, you know, moving inland, you know, the University of Connecticut, its stores, and then the rural part of the state, which is loaded with lots of farms and who are struggling with tariffs. And I don't know if you saw Secretary Perdue gave a speech out in the Midwest in Wisconsin where he basically told family farmers either get big or just go, which is a really nice message to send. It was unbelievable.
Isn't that terrible?
No, it really is, actually. It's insulting, and it's wrong.
Does he have anything to do with the Purdue chickens, or is that another whole
Yeah, he's not, not that I'm aware of, that he's related to that. But it was kind of shocking. I've actually met the guy a couple times, and it did seem like, he comes from rural Georgia. And but what a, again, it's just stunning to hear someone say something like that, given, you know, really the really interesting uptick in young farmers that are out there and the interest in you know, good locally grown, high-quality food, which, you know, farmers markets are everywhere you look these days. And then to take a shot at, you know, that really emerging growth area in food production that I really think the consumer wants is just talk about out of touch.
Well, I keep hearing that farmers are Republicans. Is that just a rumor?
No. Historically, it's always been true. But you know, clearly their loyalty has been put to test with the tariffs and counter tariffs. We've gotten a sample of that with dairy farmers because there's been counter tariffs against U.S. Milk and cheese, particularly from Mexico last year, which killed the price of milk. Because, you know, whether you sell it in upstate New York or eastern Connecticut or in Wisconsin, it's a you know, basically a commodity price that's determined by, you know, international markets. So when the purchase of U.S. dairy went down when Mexico counter-tariffed, because they're our biggest export customer for dairy products, you know, fact that we're all learning these, you know, parts of the market because of the tariff wars, again, there are farms that went out because of they just couldn't absorb that kind of loss.
I must say, you just taught me a new word. I'm going to use it all the time now. Instead of we always say upstate New York, you just said upper state New York. I like it. I like it. I think it's quite an improvement. So from now on, I'm going to talk about that.
Wow, I'm very proud of myself. You're the man. That part of America. So
let me start by asking you this. Let me start the next section, and that is, you're now a supporter of impeachment. Why did you make that decision?
Well, you know, I have to say, and I really think this is true of almost every member of the caucus, which is nobody ran for office to impeach a president. I mean, you know, we all ran for office to deal with the issues of the day, which I do think if you look at, you know, the 200 plus bills we've sent to the Senate on you name it, you know, we are very connected to bread and butter, everyday concerns of middle class, particularly middle class Americans. But having said that, so I was not an enthusiastic impeachment supporter or impeachment inquiry supporter, even after the Mueller hearings. But having the Trump-appointed inspector general come forward with a whistleblower complaint that was deemed credible, urgent national security need, and which, you know, every day is just validated and reinforced by people within the Trump administration. These are not partisan folks that are coming over to testify like Fiona Hill or Volcker or Yovanovitch, who were all Trump appointees. You know, at some point, you have a duty to your oath. And I have to tell you, I just left a caucus a few minutes ago where, again, this topic was, you know, caught up in terms of yesterday's events with the testimony that was received. And it's very solemn and, you know, kind of muted in terms of the response. People are not sort of, you know, gleeful or, in my opinion, even partisan. It's just really you know, this very kind of grim, almost sort of view, but determined as well. You know, that people believe that we're doing something that really has to be done, which is to stand up for rule of law and really be part of the checks and balances, which I do think that fundamentally was at work in 2018 with the election, which was that there really was this desire in a historic election, largest turnout for a midterm since 1914, and a plurality for the new majority of 10 million votes, which just shattered all wave elections in the past. I mean, that's really what fundamentally I think it was about, which was to create a check and balance to this president and to this administration. And I don't think people thought or hoped that it would go to this point of an impeachment inquiry. But as I said, sometimes, you know, events and have a life of their own that you really can't sort of control. And so people are doing what they think they need to do.
No, I get that. But however, it does present certain political dangers, right? I mean, you have a lot of Republicans in your district, and you want to make sure that they understand what your rationale is.
And we've been communicating diligently, you know, during the break, whether it was large settings or smaller one-on-one settings. And, you know, look, at, I mean, it's we're in a divided political time in our country's history. You're not going to there's no such thing as a shutout in this business in terms of, you know, getting support for any position, you name it. But I have to say, I mean, you know, we welcome the input with calls and emails, which we get, but it's not, it's just interesting. I think people are still in a sort of receiving mode right now in terms of trying to understand what's going on. And, you know, the process arguments that are getting thrown out there by the administration, I mean, interestingly, are trying to basically bypass the subject of the president's conduct.
Absolutely.
Which fundamentally, which this is about. And, and again, there is just absolutely no merit to the notion that there has to be a vote of the House to start this process. It's built in to the House rules. The authority of committees to conduct oversight and investigation, you know, was adopted on the first day of the session back in January. And Republicans are in the room being able to ask questions, participate in these depositions, which is what they are. They're not hearings. They're depositions. And if you look at, I mean, Fiona Hill was there for 9 hours. That's because, we did not recess, or Adam Schiff did not recess until every member, Republican and Democrat, had an opportunity to ask the questions. Ivanovich, 11 hours. So this is not a rush to judgment, and it's being very, in my opinion, being done very meticulously. I think a lot of the transcripts at some point are going to be released publicly, and there are going to be public hearings.
Sorry for interrupting. I only have 2 minutes, but I wanted to ask you very quickly. You mentioned that the House went blue as a result of checks and balances.
Right.
Do you expect 2020, that momentum will continue in the presidential election?
I mean, I still think it's out there, and I as E.J. Dionne, who's one of my favorite political observers, said, you know, the country wants to go in a different direction than Donald Trump. The question is, will the Democrats let them do it? You know, that's obviously, you know, on display with the debates and, you know, the way the election.
Are you disappointed in the debates?
I mean, I actually feel sorry for the people on the stage, because it's just, I mean, I've done a lot of debates over the years, and it's so unwieldy. And I don't think they're really being that elucidating, you know, to the viewer. But I don't think Tom Perez or anybody else has any other sort of, there's no other plan B in terms of how to do this. And, you know, obviously there's going to start being, I think, a narrowing of the herd, you know, as Iowa fast approaches. And, you know, the shift of money from, you know, away from candidates. So, so far I don't think we've done mortal damage, but it's certainly, I hear from a lot of people, they find it hard to really sit and watch this. And you know, hopefully, again, we're not going to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, well, I think the potential, you're exactly right, is there. And it bothers me a great deal. In any case, Joe Courtney, it is wonderful to talk to you. You've always been very kind in showing up and giving us your thoughts. And when we come back the next time, we'll go somewhere else, okay?
Great. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for being Joe Courtney of Connecticut's beautiful 2nd District.